you have founded the International Association of Cold Case Investigators. Both you, Mike, and you, Chief, both were involved in that.
Yeah.
Talk to us about that.
Mike came to me and said, there's a lot of cold cases. So we formed a corporation, the International Association of Cold Case Investigators, obtained a 501c3 nonprofit status. The IRS is not the easiest organization to work with, even before the current brouhaha. And we were not involved in anything political at all. It was merely an organization attempting to provide training and education and perhaps leads for cold case and communication between agencies. Mike has carried the ball on that.
It's an organization that does not promise that we're going to work somebody's cold case, investigate it, because that's just unimaginable. But we're there for networking between agencies because these killers travel from one county, one state, one nation to another. We knew it had to be on an international level. So we network, we share information, and that information may be on new methods, may be on model legislation. It may be on serial killers that have been caught, and we know that all their murders are not discovered to this point. And then as training, we found a tremendous void in this area because cold cases are unique, and they don't just involve investigators. One of the things that we knew we had to be different when we founded this is to open this up to be an inclusive organization, to not have only law enforcement people, but to have prosecutors, to have forensic professionals, have educators, survivors who are a tremendous resource and have been disregarded in this process.
Not as, only disregarded, but in some cases actually pushed out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As well as the news media, because if you have a responsible news media outlet source, whether it be entertainment like the Cold Case Files or John Erling, who's telling the morning news, getting that word out there is huge. We have found it to be a much needed organization. People have very high expectations of us. Our problem continues to remain to be, how do we raise funds? Mm-hmm. You know, if a policeman knows how to get money from somebody, he's probably not the policeman you want.
Right.
You know, that's never been our forte. And so we're trying to kind of branch out and go for some different fundraisings. But we do have, just next week, as a matter of fact, coming to the police academy, we have an internationally known woman that deals in water fatalities and murders, not just drowning, but drowning someone to murder them. And that's a really unique and, I don't want to say easy, way to get away with murder, but it is a way that it's very hard to prove that as a murder. So she's coming to the academy. We have about 175 people signed up. That's a success story right there. Mm-hmm. So we're doing that. We're trying to make very affordable training for just the rank and file, whoever it may be. In this, we also have some serial killers that have agreed to tell us how they got away with murders. We're trying to set the stage for a national conference and not glorify a serial killer, but use them for what they are. Just, how did you get away with murder? Mm-hmm. How did we not find you for 20 years?
The migratory killer. Mike talked about the Geraldine Martin case, and that really was the seed from which the idea grew, simply because the investigator in California had solved his case. He didn't have to do what he did, but he realized that he was dealing with the serial killer, and he got the company logs covering this over-the-road trucker, then made a chart and contacted each law enforcement agency that he'd been in or near to see if they had an unsolved homicide. Do you know how many homicides he cleared as a result of that?
It's still going up, but I think it's up to around a dozen now. This was early 2000. The internet was not quite where it is now. Very few police departments had websites and then put their unsolved cases on there. So he called me up one day, and I remember it. It was on a Friday. And he said, hey, here's who I am. Here's what I'm doing. You guys had a good website, and I think that this guy might have killed Geraldine Martin. By that afternoon, we had the DNA techies on the phone and had made an initial match. What we realized was, wow, the power of the internet, an internet organization. And then we said, wow, does the federal government have anything like this? No, they don't. And they never will because they're overregulated. There's too many turf battles and people are tired of promises that they can't keep. So we thought, you know what, we could do this ourselves. And it was a pretty simplistic thought we could do it ourselves because it's turned out to be a really hard ride. But we realized that agencies that put their open cases out there, it's like fishing with a trot line. You get more hooks in the water and bait, you're going to get some bites. Mm-hmm. So we did, and Gerald E. Martin was solved, and we're talking right now with people in Los Angeles about a show that may highlight this whole process, not highlight us that did it, but just here's our business model, if you will, and because we're detectives that have worked murders for 30 years, we know how to do it. We're not constrained by bureaucracy now. So we look for more successes.
There must be unsolved crimes that probably, I don't know if either one of you think about, and you just can't understand why they weren't solved. I often, when I go into an airport, or maybe you go to a big football game or whatever, the thought always occurs to me, I wonder how many people in this airport have killed somebody. That out of so many thousands of people that you're around, that maybe somebody has killed somebody there and they got away with it.
Hey, we're haunted by that. You put the numbers to it. 58% of the murders are solved. That means 42% aren't. That means some of these guys are killing people. So many victims have been abducted and killed, and their bodies have been disposed of somewhere. I mean, that's a silent disaster right there. They're not even a murder number. You know, they've been reported missing and will probably never be found. I think it haunts us daily. I mean, I think about it everywhere I go, every minute. It's been my life, and you can't change that.
Years ago, I contracted with an organization in Washington, D.C., and I did management studies of law enforcement agencies all over the country. My practice was to go into the city at least early in the afternoon before I was to meet with the police people and just walk around the streets, wander through. If you know what to look for, you can pretty well decide what kind of a police department they have and can go into the meeting saying, well, I know you've got these problems, this problem, that problem. And it's surprising how many police managers will deny that they have these problems. This ties back to the thing that Mike has talked about and that we've talked about repeatedly, and that's the need for training and to make people aware of some of the things that cold case people know and have worked with for years. It's a difficult task because we all are pretty comfortable in our own environment, and for some stranger to walk in and say, your problem is this, and you can solve it by doing this, just goes against the grain. And it's better if it comes from within. So if you have a training program that calls for one or two guys from an agency to go to a training program and they could come back with some ideas and they're the kind of people that can do the things that Mike Huff does and talk to people and push the ideas forward within the organization, it's a lot easier than having a stranger come in and try to tell somebody how to do it.